I think we're actually teaching you on a higher level. Bhakti Shastri is very simple. So I think you'll find these questions very simple. I have one student who took the course in Vrindavan, and he was almost disappointed because the examination was too simple for him. Although, I mean, I don't know how, I think he got about a 90, but or whatever. But he was kind of expecting more difficult examination. So I think you're going to even find that more, because we're going a lot deeper, and we're discussing all the word meaning. In one sense, you may find fault with me and criticize me for that. But in another sense, later on, you'll find that it's actually beneficial. So, hopefully, these questions and the examination that you take, you'll find it almost too easy. And anyway, that's good then. Because we're like teaching you the Gita on the level of Bhaktivedanta, even higher than Bhaktivaibhava. So it's... So the notes that you have, I think you'll be using this for like classes that you give well into the future, like even 5-10 years from now, you'll still be going back to your notes. So we're in the middle of chapter 4, and we should go over the titles of the sections. So yesterday we did it's the first two sections. The first section is from 1 to 10. And what did you call that one? Please raise your hand.
Transcendental knowledge in Parampara.
Transcendental knowledge in Parampara. Good.
Knowledge about Krishna.
Knowledge about Krishna.
Krishna supremacy.
Krishna supremacy.
Knowledge about Krishna.
Knowledge about Krishna.
Krishna's secret identity.
Secret identity. Some esoteric title.
Transcendental knowledge about Krishna.
Huh?
Transcendental knowledge about Krishna.
Okay, yeah.
Result of knowing Krishna in Parampara.
What?
Result of knowing Krishna in
Oh, the result of knowing him in Parampara. Okay, anyone have a different one? Yes?
Transcendental knowledge through Guru Parampara.
Transcendental knowledge through?
Guru Parampara.
Guru Parampara, okay. So, Murijan originally titled this Transcendental Knowledge About Krishna. And that's what it says in the VTE workbook. So we'll take that one. The summary of that section is that as the Supreme Authority, Krishna spoke this knowledge earlier to Vibhaswan and now again to Arjuna because he is Krishna's devotee and friend. Although Krishna is unborn, he appears to re-establish religion to protect his devotees and to kill the demoniac. Anyone who understands this knowledge will attain love for Krishna and go back to Godhead at the end of his life. Right. Okay, the next section is from 11 to 15. And we also went through that yesterday. So you should have a pretty good idea of what is there. What's your title for that one?
Result of Transcendental
Knowledge. Someone else? What do you say? Bolo. What do you say? Yeah, I don't know your name. But... Huh?
Shamanan Go.
Shamanan Go. Shamanan, please enlighten us. Huh? You didn't understand that. Okay. So, did you try to understand it? Oh, okay. Anyway, try to make time.
Way for way for liberation.
The way to
for liberation,
or way to liberation. Okay. Yes. Karma Kanda to the platform of transcendental knowledge. Right. Okay. What do you say?
Verse number?
Huh? 11 to 15, the second section.
Reciprocation.
Reciprocation. From who to who?
Krishna.
Oh, right, right. Because of number 11. Okay. What about Bhakti Leo? What do you say, Bhakti Leo? Скажите, пожалуйста, об этом.
I make a little bit different chapters.
Different sections. So what was your second section?
It's from 5 to 15.
5 to 15.
Transcendental appearance and activities.
Transcendental appearance and activities of Krishna. Okay. Anyone else? Radhe Shyam.
Applying transcendental knowledge.
Okay, yeah, the Burijan's title was Applying Transcendental Knowledge. And the VTE book says, Krishna as goal of all paths and creator of Varnashram. Which is probably a better title, I think. This one, Krishna is the goal of all paths and the creator of Varnashram, of the Varnashram system. There it is said, after giving knowledge about himself that leads to liberation, Krishna now explains how he is the ultimate goal of all paths and how everyone is dependent upon his mercy for attaining success. He created the Varnashram system whereby men can fulfill their material desires and make progress towards liberation. But he is above this system.
Krishna free from karma.
Krishna free from karma. That's also true. But that's a sub-point. Yeah. When you look at the other thing. The two main verses are Yayataman Prapadyante and Chaturvanyan Nashastan. So, after he describes about himself how he reciprocates with those who mam apashita, who take shelter of him, and how he gives them liberation and prema, then he considers, actually, I'm reciprocating with so many kinds of people, right, in the world. And they're all approaching me in different ways. The devotees are approaching in the highest way. And then there are people with so many material desires. There's tyagis, karma yogis, jnana yogis, ashtanga yogis, worshippers of demigods. So Krishna thinks, oh, I'm actually reciprocating with all of them. And since there are so many different kinds of people, I have to create a kind of sub-religious structure to help give them support. And that's the Varnashram. Because if the people have so many desires and they're situated in ignorance with passion, passion with ignorance, passion with goodness, and goodness with passion, and all different varieties, then he has to give them, you know, prescribed duties and instructions for each kind of person. And so many different kinds of persons say they all need some support before they come to transcendence and to bhakti. They all need some help. And that's the Varnashram system, which gives all these prescribed duties. It's like, I don't know, you've seen in India, have you ever gone to a circus? Right? And you know, sometimes they have a rope pulled tight and the person walks over that rope. It's very high, right? And he usually has a stick. At least when he practices, he has a stick to help balance himself. And usually there's a net in case he falls down. So, you know, the varna is like the net. And the ashram is kind of like the stick to help balance him. And he's walking across the ocean of material existence. You know, something like this. So when someone's expert, then they don't need the net and they don't need the stick. If the person's doing nirgun bhakti, he is so expert, he can run across the rope and flip over and jump back and forth and do spins and like this. But in the beginning, he needs help. So he gets some balance from the ashrams and then he gets the net of the varnas which direct him how to act. Because the modes are pushing him. So if he gets pushed off the rope, then he can fall down. So he needs some assistance, some backup. But if he's nirgun, if he's a pure devotee, then there's nothing pushing him. So he can just walk right across the rope. Like this. So then, you know, Krishna's discussing that, and then he's mentioning what is it? Let me get back to that section. I used to explain it in this way. So then Arjuna is saying that, okay, you're saying that you did this and you didn't do it. So in the path of karma, there's, you know, reactions, there's sin, there's bondage in the material world. So Arjuna's wondering, but you're also here and you're working as a kshatriya in the Varnashram system. And don't you also get bound to this world by karma? Then Krishna explains, no. Name karmanti nipanti. That I don't get any reaction. Why? Name karma palespriha. Because I don't desire the fruits. So Krishna explains how he is transcendental to karma and working and varnashram while he's here. And then he says that anyone who understands this about me, he also becomes like that. So the jiva, the nitya bhava jiva is also meant to become transcendental like Krishna. By understanding that Krishna is not enjoying the fruits, and oh, I'll do that also. I won't enjoy the fruits, and then I'll get also become transcendental. So then Krishna says, yes, now you caught the idea, Arjuna. Just like all of the great souls, the acharyas in the past, like Vivasvan, Janaka, right? Purver api mumukshubi. All of those persons attain liberation by acting in the same way as me. Because I'm coming here, but I don't have to come here. And I'm working, but I'm not trying to enjoy. So just do like me. And then you'll attain liberation. So in this way, Krishna very cleverly moved the conversation back from himself over to Nishkam Karma Yoga. So now, he's going to explain Nishkam Karma Yoga in the next section. So he says that it's not that you can just follow this whole system of karma and karma yoga without any intelligence. or without any discrimination, just blindly following it like a sheep, like sheep. No, you have to understand very clearly what is the objective of your work. What is the objective of your yajna? What is the objective of your following prescribed duties? So everything must be done with great discrimination, knowing the objective of the work. So now, in these next 9 verses, Krishna explains how work can be seen as inactivity, or understood as inactivity. How you can work without reaction, in other words, which is the philosophy of Nishkam Karma Yoga. He's going to explain the philosophical features of Nishkam Karma Yoga. And the whole idea is that you can become transcendental while working, so you don't have to go to the forest and meditate and leave the battlefield. Okay? Let's see. So, I don't know how I should do this. Should we just go into that section now, then we can finish the other the section titles? You leave some space in your notebook for the other section titles, and we'll finish them after we finish this one section. Okay? What answer?
How you gave knowledge to Vivaswan?
How you gave knowledge to Vivaswan? Well, I mean, that might have been something in the commentaries. Did I mention this? Oh, you mean... I see. The question that he asks in text 4, is that it? Well, that's already finished. He explained that... Oh, where does it end? Well, I would say it ends... And 8 is the last one, I think. Let's see. Nine also. 9 is the summary or conclusion. Or the 9 is the first result, and 10 is the second result. But the answer is given in 5, 6, 7, and 8. Okay, and then if you know this answer, then you attain liberation and bhava, or prema. Okay. Okay, let's go to text 16 now.
Kim karma kim akarmiti kavayo kyatra mohitaha. Tate karma pavakshami yatkarva mokshasheshuha.
Even the intelligent are bewildered in determining what is action and what is inaction. Now I shall explain to you what action is, knowing which you shall be liberated from all misfortune. So Krishna says, pavakshami, I will explain. About what? Kim karma, what is karma? Kim akarma, and what is akarma? Right? And it's not an easy subject. Kavayo api atra mohi. Even the kavis are bewildered by all these things. So, if you're feeling a little bewildered, also by this philosophy, you're also in good company. And what is the result? Yajgyatva, knowing this, mokshashe, ashupat, you become free from that which is inauspicious. So Prabhupada comments, action in Krishna consciousness has to be executed in accord with the examples of previous bona fide devotees. This is recommended in the 15th verse of the last section. Why such action should not be independent will be explained in the text to follow. The Prabhupada's also giving some cause and effect explanation of the text here. Vishnu Chakravarti says that even the wise should not perform karma simply by imitating the previous acharyas. Rather, they should act only when they have understood the specific nature of karma. Now, thus, karma tattva is now being explained by Krishna. Because he's telling Krishna, Arjuna to do nishkam karma yoga, but he didn't explain why. There was no, you know, nyaya prasthan given. So now he's explaining that. Because sambandha is what, abhideya is how, and nyaya prasthan is why. Right? Logic. Sambandha tattva is what. What is the topic? Abhideya is how do you do it. And prayojan tattva is why. What's the reason for it? Reasoning and logic. And actually, in anything you do in the world, there's always these three things. Just like you need a pair of shoes. Yeah. So you're gonna get married. Say someone's gonna get married, right? So there's sambandha. First, the man and the woman, they meet and they talk. Right. And or the man decides he wants to get married, the woman wants to get married, they meet each other, they talk. Of course, in the past it wasn't like that, but nowadays. So then the process is they get to know each other, and then the man may take her to dinner, or there's a procedure, right, how they fall in love, like they go to the movies together. And then finally, they... You know, he asks her, please marry me. She says yes. And then they go to the church and they get married. Right? And that's the prayojan. Or the prayojan could be, you can say that they live together and have children and have a family. Or is it you go to buy a pair of shoes. You need a pair of shoes, so you need to know some basic information, you know. What size foot do I have? Where can I buy shoes? And how much money do I need? Right? You need some basic information and a desire for shoes. So then you go through the process. Maybe you call on the telephone to some of the shops. Do you have shoes? Yes. How much do they cost? Okay. And then you go in a rickshaw. You go down and you go in the shops, you start looking at them, oh, this is nice, you try them on, oh, this feels good. And that's the process, that's the abhideya. And then the prayojan is you pay the money and you take the shoes. And you like this. So anything you do, there's like this, these three things. So Krishna's now describing like the philosophy behind why you do something. Yes. No. Prayojan and nyaya are similar. Yeah. Because why you do it? Because I want to... Why do you get married? Because I want to have a family and I want to exchange loving sentiments, romance with this lady and da-da-da-da-da. That's the reason. The reason is the result. Why do you want to go to the shoe store? I want to buy some new shoes. Right? That's the prayojan is the reason. Okay, so now karma tattva is being explained. Karmano hyapi bhodhavyam bhodhavyam cha vikarmanaha akarmanascha bhodhavyam kahana karmano gatihi. The intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. So Prabhupada comments, if one is serious about liberation from material bondage, one has to understand the distinctions between action, inaction, and unauthorized actions. So he mentions all three, karmana, vikarmana, and akarmana. So this should, bodhavyam, should be understood. He uses the word three times. So karma should be understood, vikarma should be understood, and akarma should be understood. But gahana, karma no gati, it's not so easy to understand. Okay, text 18. Karmanya karmaya pasyera karmani cha karmaya sabhudhi man manusheshu sayukta krishna karma krit. One who sees inaction in action and action in inaction is intelligent among men, and he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. Okay. First of all, maybe we should go back to the next verse, or to the previous verse, because I'm assuming that you know what these three terms mean, but some of you may not. So when you teach, you have to assume the person doesn't know. So you have to present the basic information, right? So we have some definitions here. So let us just say karma means action. And generally it's understood to be pious action, or at least within the scope of the Vedic injunctions. Okay. Akarma means inaction. And vikarma means unauthorized or, what is the other word? Prohibited action. Actions which are forbidden in the shastras, outside of the parameters of the Vedic injunctions. So generally in Varnashram, everyone has various karmas they perform. They're like duties. And if one performs vikarma, then he gets a bad reaction. He gets a horrible result. He has to suffer, and there's some misery. But if he performs karma, then he doesn't get that. He doesn't get a horrible reaction. Generally, he'll get some pious reaction. And a person who doesn't act is three kinds. The akarma is three kinds. One is kind of like a foolish person who's lazy, who doesn't want to work. It's akarma. He doesn't work, right? So no action. The second kind is a person who, jnani, or a person who's disgusted because he realizes that the results of karma are temporary and real petty. So he's disgusted and he just gives up karma. That's like a jnani, a person who negates. So you have thesis, antithesis, and then the last one is a person who begins bhakti. He hears harikatha and then he becomes like attracted to the path of bhakti. So he's a devotee. So basically you have kind of like karma, jnana, and bhakti. Karma is the enjoyer who's like foolish and lazy. He's like a karmi. But he's giving up karma. Then jnani, and then a devotee. Okay. So, if if the karmi gives up karma, then he's in a bad shape. Because there's nothing for him to do. He has no adhikar to give up his karma, but he's just foolish and lazy. The other person has some adhikar because he has knowledge that the path of karma is temporary and the results are petty. And the third person has the highest adhikar to not perform karmic work because he's got a taste or getting a taste for Krishna Katha. So he begins pursuing the path of bhakti. Okay. So now karma and akarma are explained in text 18. Krishna's not talking about vikarma now. Just the first two. Or whatever, karma and akarma. He says, karman ya karma ya pasyat. Akarmani cha karmani. Sa buddhiman manusheshu sa yukta krishna kartakrit. It's talking about the person who sees akarma in karma and karma in akarma. So that person is buddhiman, he's intelligent. And he's transcendental. Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes that one who sees a person working for purification of heart, which will bring him to the platform of knowledge, sees his work as non-work, a karma. Now, in the past, I've had it presented a new translation of this verse, which will give you, hopefully, if I can remember it, some different view of what this verse is saying. Because, especially for people who speak English or people who don't know about Sanskrit, then it's a little difficult. Inaction. This is just like a tongue, it's like a game, playing with your tongue. See if you can say it. Inaction. One who sees inaction, and action inaction. So one could say, one who sees no reaction in selfless work, and reaction in false renunciation is intelligent among men, and he's transcendental. You got that? One who sees no reaction in selfless work and sees reaction in false renunciation is intelligent. Okay? This is the meaning of the word. Prabhupada writes that the sense of eternal servitorship to Krishna makes one immune to all sorts of reactionary elements of work. So someone who's Krishna conscious automatically is free from all reactions because he's acting selflessly. So the person sees no reaction in selfless work. That's a devotee. So because of his sense of servitorship to Krishna, he's thinking, I'm doing this for Krishna. So it makes him immune to the reactions of work. Whereas other people, like as we mentioned, I have to do this panchasuna. And I have a list. Kandini, Peshani, Chuli, Udakumbhi, and Marjani. This is the ones that we went through already. These are the Sanskrit or maybe the Hindi words. Chuli, is that it? It's Hindi, right? But I think it could be Sanskrit too.
What are the names?
Kandini.
Kandini.
Kandini. Kandini, Peshani, Chuli, Chuli, in stove, oven, Udakumbhi, and Marjani. So Kandini means the mortar and pestle when you're crushing the spices. Like in the cup, when you're breaking the spices, right? When you're making some churna, Kandini. And then Peshani is the when you have a big grinding stone and you're grinding the grains, probably mostly wheat, atta, to make atta. Okay. Then chuli, you know, what's the stove or the oven when you're cooking. Udakumbhi, that's under the water pot, because uda means under. And kumbha means pot. And marjani, cleaning with the broom. With the, what is it, jaru, right? Prabhupada, okay, you got that? Prabhupada said in Bombay in 1974, karma has two results, either suffering or enjoying. Of course, in the material world, there's no enjoyment. But with the hope of enjoyment, we agree to suffer. And that is called enjoyment. Very funny. Now, devotees are the first one. Karmani akarmaya pasyet, right? Because they're working, but there's no reaction. But sometimes people who have no knowledge, when they see a devotee working or distributing books or doing something, they see it on the material level. They see, oh, this guy's trying to get money, right? Just like I remember when I used to distribute books in the airport, sometimes the businessmen, they would stop and watch us. And they would be amazed because they would see some young guy, you know, approaching someone and 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 finally, and everybody would say, no, 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 go away, what are you, get a job. You know, and the devotee just was transcendental to all of that negative reaction. He's being, you know, this is like in training centers for businessmen and for salesmen. This is the main factor that they focus on, is the rejection factor. Because people, generally, normal human beings, they feel so rejected and they feel so they can't go on anymore. You know? But they were used to watch us because they saw that we didn't care about being rejected. In fact, we kind of liked it or something. You know what I mean? So that, you know, this. I remember once a man came up to me, because I was like approaching people, and then I was selling books, and he saw me sell like three books, and then he came up to me and goes, "Hey, kid, you're really good. You know, if you ever leave this group, you come to me. Take my card." He gave me his business card. If you ever leave this group you're with, the Hare Krishnas, then come, give me a call. You know, I'll engage you and join my company. You know. It's, you know, it's like, so he was seeing in one way, and but the devotee is seeing a completely different way. Of course, I never, you know, called him on. It wasn't interesting. But outsiders sometimes they think the devotees are attached, and they see them enjoying life one way, and the karmis in other ways. So, how can such people be philosophically convinced that this lifestyle that we're living will actually bring them to perfection. What would you say? The question is then, how can we convince a person philosophically that if they follow this lifestyle we're living, that it will bring them to a perfect stage? What would, if there was a karmi person, he was watching some book, then what would you say to, how would you convince that person philosophically? Okay, that's a good point. Did you hear what he said? He said, Yata taro mula nishe chanena. This verse, that if you water the leaf of the tree, then the tree doesn't get the benefit, but you have to put water at the root. Then it nourishes the entire tree, all the twigs and branches. So if you serve God, then you'll get the benefit. Okay, so but they may say that, but you're not serving God, you're just, you know, looks like you're just making money off it. Or, let me say.
You tell them that, we are born into this world and we have no information about who created this universe. So it's the best way to ask the creator of this universe how to achieve perfection. So this is a bona fide process given by God Himself. If you follow, you will get perfection. Because just like an example of a motorcycle, the company who manufactured the motorcycle knows best use of the motorcycle. So you ask the manufacturers how to use this equipment. Similarly, this body has been given to us not by our own choice, but some supreme will. So similarly, if you take the instructions of that supreme will, then certainly you can achieve perfection.
But you're doing the same thing as me. I'm enjoying life and I'm working, and you're also enjoying it just in a different way. You're all singing and dancing like that, and I sing and dance also. And you're working, and I'm also working. What do you say?
But when you are doing that activity, you are the center of the activity. But when we are doing the activity, center is Krishna. Because we are doing for His pleasure, and by giving Him pleasure, we are getting pleasure. It's not that we are working for our own pleasure separately. We are working for Krishna's pleasure, and with the pleasure of the Lord, then automatically we also get the pleasure. So there is the responsibility of result of the activity is completely dependent on the Supreme Lord. By His mercy only we can get. But the responsibility for your activities lies on you. Whether you will be successful or not successful.
I try to enjoy it, but there's no guarantee. It's not up to me. It's up to God. Sometimes I go to a club and I have a terrible time. I have a headache and I don't meet any friends. I don't like the music and I go home and I feel horrible. But sometimes I go out and I feel very happy and I dance and sing, I meet my friends. It's all on God's arrangement.
But devotee never becomes unhappy by saying he is not successful. He is happy with the endeavor that yes, by my endeavor Krishna is pleased, although I cannot get.
Okay, that's a good point. Even when the devotee is not successful, then he still feels satisfied. That's one major difference. Eh? What would you say?
Actually, you are limitedly happy. Like, your nature is to always be happy. Whatever happiness you are getting, that is like a way. But if you associate
like a what?
Waves, which is temporary, can be last.
A wave.
Avyayam wave. Like Krishna says in Gita, susukum kartur avyayam. Whenever somebody associates with Krishna, with God, you get unlimitedly happiness. Like your happiness may be in the morning, maybe you will be happy in the evening, you will be happy. But when you associate with Lord, you will be always happy because He is always happy. So the associated person is always happy. Because God cannot be like, otherwise He cannot be God. Prabhupada says, God has to be perfect, otherwise He cannot be God.
Okay, but you guys go out and sell books and make money, and I go out and I sell my books and I make money also. So what makes you so transcendental? You claiming that you're so transcendental. And I'll do the same thing. And I also believe in God. and you believe in God.
Activity may be the same, but it is a question of what consciousness we are working for. For whom are we acting? Duryodhana was fighting and Arjuna was fighting. Both were apparently having the same chariot, the chariots were there, arrows, horses, everything was same. And both were fighting. But Duryodhana was fighting for his own pleasure, whereas Arjuna, although he did not want to fight in the beginning, but later on he agreed to only on the order of Krishna, to please Krishna.
Okay.
So activity is same, but consciousness is.
But there's another important point that you should mention. Well, what do you say?
We should say practically the things that when we are going for some enjoyment outside, then one time the same action gives us satisfaction, the next time the same action will not give us satisfaction. That means there is not a permanent one. But coming to devotional service, as you are doing it for others, for the pleasure of Krishna, the same activity repeatedly you do, chanting the holy names again and again and again, it gives you constant satisfaction.
Okay, let's talk about work though, and action, because that's really
that
the
action.
Topic is the karma. That's true,
yeah.
what you're saying is true.
Book distribution also, when you go, even if you are not distributing, you meet.
But what makes your work transcendental? What do you say?
We are working on behalf of Krishna. Like a
how do I know that? I mean, I could say I'm working on behalf of Krishna also. What's the proof?
When we are working in a company and we don't...
our own enjoyment, but we just give it to Krishna. That's the, one of the main points, right? That you kind of miss the main point. Can you add to that, Chaitanya Charma?
When we agree to follow our authority, the culpability for the action is transferred to that authority. For example,
mm-hmm.
soldier, he fights for the nation, and he may kill the enemy, but he is not culpable. Similarly, when we agree to do Krishna's will, then and it is Krishna's will that Ms. Krishna and his representative mm-hmm. spiritual master is telling us to distribute books. So we are doing it. Because we are following his authority, we are not culpable for our actions. That's how we stay free from bondage.
But the president of the country told me that I should work. And I'm also working.
So the authority has to be the supreme authority. Because the law of karma is infallible, but above the law of karma is the maker of the law of karma. So he can grant immunity from the law of karma. So the president can grant immunity from the law of the state.
Right. Okay. So devotees are... philosophically, they're under authority, and plus they're not taking the fruit of their work for themselves.
Both are distributing books, like one is distributing vidya, which is the transcendental knowledge, the other one is distributing avidya.
That's a good point. The topic of the context of the. Right, that's another important difference. Good. Okay. All right, we'll stop this exercise now and go to the next verse. Yasya sarve samarambha kamma sankalpa varchitaha yanatme dhadda karmanam tamahu panditam buddhaha. One is understood to be in full knowledge, whose every endeavor is devoid of desire for sense gratification. He is said by sages to be a worker for whom the reactions of work have been burned up by the fire of perfect knowledge. Right? So his every endeavor is devoid of the desire for sense gratification. That's another important point. He's not doing it to satisfy his senses. Kama sankalpa varjita. That's the point. He's free of kama sankalpa. So Prabhupada has said that Arjuna wanted to satisfy his senses materially. It appeared nice that he didn't want to fight. But Krishna did not approve. Why? Because the basic principle is kama sankalpa. Here he says, kama sankalpa varjita. If we reject kama, then our sinful reactions are burned. If we reject kama, then our sinful reactions are burned. Kama sankalpa varjita. Bhagavad Gita Bhushan writes, one who performs activities without desire to enjoy, and his acts are redirected towards self-realization, is called intelligent. Why? When one works in this way, his heart is purified and knowledge appears in his heart and acts like fire, which burns the wood of karma. The jnana is the fire and karma is the wood. When the heart is purified, knowledge appears. It's like a fire. And that is the thing which burns the wood of karma. So that person, he is liberated. Prabhupada writes, only a person in full knowledge can understand the activities of a person in Krishna consciousness. Because the person in Krishna consciousness is devoid of all kinds of sense gratificatory propensities. It is to be understood that he has burned up the reactions of his work by perfect knowledge. So when other people work, they use the money to enjoy their senses. But we don't. And there's no even hope to try to enjoy. Right from the very beginning, when we go to distribute books or when we cook for the deities, we're not trying to get something for ourselves. Right. We're not collecting money so that we can buy our house or a car or something. And we're not cooking so that we can eat the food and enjoy or get paid by the temple. There's no hope for sense enjoyment. So then it's yadagni dagda kangmanam. The person's fixed in knowledge. I am the servant of Krishna. I'm doing this to connect with Krishna and attain the spiritual atmosphere. So there's a spiritual objective in the mind. Okay, let's go to the next verse. Yes?
If a person in full knowledge and can understand the activity of the person in Krishna consciousness. So a person who is in full knowledge, he can be Krishna consciousness.
Well, at least, okay, we'll get to that. But of course, we're not talking about bhakti here. But a devotee automatically inculcates or incorporates these principles of the Nishkam Karma Yogi. Because Bhakti Yogi is higher. But everything that the Nishkam Karma Yogi does, the devotee also automatically is included with it.
I am asking that for you, written, if only a person in full knowledge, who is this person? This person can be a devotee only, no?
No, the Nishkam Karma Yogi means that he's doing it to attain the Supreme. Let's just say that. He may not be in love with Krishna yet, but okay, let's at least he realizes there's a Supreme. Right? Text 20. Chakva karma phala sangam nitya tripto nirashayaha karmanyabhi pravritto pi naiva kinchit karosa. Abandoning all attachment to the results of his activities, ever satisfied and independent, he performs no fruitive action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. So, nirashraya means that he doesn't depend on anyone for his maintenance. That he's independent. This is a person who's trying to come to the perfected stage. He's a sadhaka in Nishkam Karma Yoga. Now the siddha is described in the next three verses. The one who has attained perfection in this path of Nishkam Karma.
Nirashiryata chittatma chakpa sarva parigraha shariram kibalam karma
kurvan napnoti kilbisham. Such a man of understanding acts with mind and intelligence, perfectly controlled, gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions, and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by sinful reactions. So these are some of the things, the philosophical points, which you could tell to the person who's doubting about, you know, your activities being transcendental. These are some of the philosophical points that devotees are also free from kama sankalpa, and they're also not dependent on others for their maintenance. I mean, in working in the world, and their mind and senses are controlled. Yata chittatma and nirashir, no proprietorship over possessions. And sharinam kevalam karma, like minimizing bodily necessities. Right? The karmis, they don't minimize their bodily. They try to maximize. Right? Their mind and body are not controlled. And they have a great sense of possessiveness over their house and different articles. But if they come here and they see the brahmachari ashram, they'll run out of this place. You know? You'll see, well, there's nothing to enjoy, nothing to possess. It's just the floor and some locker. What can I do here? There are some, let's say, connotations here. The word nirashir, other than meaning without desire for the result, also has the connotation that not desiring more unnecessarily, like free from greed. And it also means not being very fond of material enjoyment. They'd have no fruitive desire. This parigraha means unnecessary collecting or overeating. So someone who is sangam tyakva sarva parigraha means he doesn't eat unless he actually needs to eat. And he doesn't collect more than he needs. He travels light. And the word shariram, other than the usual understanding about the body, keeping body and soul together, it also indicates that this person, he can even do what is called asat. Pratigraha. Right? This is one of the six activities of the brahmana. Right? The pratigraha. Right? Is it pratig or parigraha? Parigraha. All right, I wrote the wrong word. Parigraha. Right. So it means that some kind of maybe even dishonest begging like this. That even if the person, if he acts like in such a way, he won't get any reaction. Even if he does something wrong. Even if he, I don't know what's an example of this. Asat parigraha. Asat parigraha. I don't know. Maybe he'll say it's for something that it's not. You know, sometimes devotees also do that. Right? They may collect donations and they say it's for people in Bangladesh or it's for Food for Life, but they use it for the temple. So, of course, that's not morally correct and we shouldn't do that. But here, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that even if this person who has these qualities, even if he does something like that, say by mistake, or a few times he does that, and then later realizes I shouldn't do this, still there's no reaction for him. He won't get a reaction for that. It doesn't mean that you should do that, because we also have to consider loka vichar, what the people think of our movement, because we're preachers. We're not just babas, you know, begging. And so babajis may not care what people think of them, but preachers have to care. So we have to care about those things. But even if we did make some mistakes in the past, you know, persons, they wouldn't have to get a karmic reaction for that. That's the point. Okay.
That is I observe the category of so-called renunciates, you know, who just flow with the wind of renunciates, you know.
Because flow with the wind of renunciates.
Yeah, there are others, like here Krishna is talking of somebody who's nirashir and kyatta sarva paridaya.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who live without home, like you were telling about the brahmachari ashram life, which is so simple.
Uh-huh.
But there are somebody who lives like brahmacharis.
You mean like the man at the train station?
Ah, yeah. They are not very conscious.
They're also some kind of tyagis. Huh?
Yeah, they don't realize that I have renounced my mother, father, I have left home, I left my possessions, everything, I'm doing all this for Krishna's pleasure. They don't even consciously think about it. They just flow with the wind. Everyone is going to
say,
like that.
They flow with the gunas, I would say. They're completely controlled by the gunas. And we'll see in the next things that are coming up, that there has to be deliberation on the Supreme. Otherwise, you're not really performing any kind of yajna. I mean, you know, like there's, Prabhupada said monkeys are also renounced. They eat only fruits, they have no clothes, they live in the forest, they don't have a job, they don't own a home. Right? But they're not transcendentalists. Because they're not thinking about God in any form. They're not even thinking about Hanuman. Right? So their mentality is just enjoying. So we see that they have like 10 girlfriends. Right? So some babas are like that too. It's just that they just happen to be either very lazy or unfortunate. They have no good karma to make money, so they're living in a very simple way, but they have the enjoying mentality. Yes. Prabhupada writes, he moves exactly like a part of a machine. As a machine part requires oiling and cleaning for maintenance, so a Krishna conscious man maintains himself by his work just to remain fit for action in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. He is therefore immune to all reactions of his endeavors. Like an animal, he has no proprietorship even over his own body. A cruel proprietor of an animal sometimes kills the animal in his possession, yet the animal does not protest, nor does it have any real independence. A Krishna-conscious person, fully engaged in self-realization, has very little time to falsely possess any material object. For maintaining body and soul, he does not require unfair means of accumulating money. He does not, therefore, become contaminated by such material sins. He is free from all reactions to his actions. Text 22. This is an interesting verse. Yadripcha labha santushto dvandva tito vimatsara samau siddhau siddhau cha kvedvapi na nibhadyate. He was satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled, although performing actions. Prabhupada writes that a Krishna conscious person does not make much endeavor even to maintain his body. He is satisfied with gains which are obtained of their own accord. He neither begs nor borrows, but he labors honestly as far as it is in his power. And he is satisfied with whatever is obtained by his own honest labor. He is therefore independent in his livelihood. He does not allow anyone's service to hamper his own service in Krishna consciousness. However, for the service of the Lord, he can participate in any kind of action without being disturbed by the duality of the material world. So Madhavendra Puri is an example of someone who neither begs nor borrows. He was transcendental to even begging. And he's yadrcha labhasantushto. He's just satisfied whatever he gets by the will of providence, whatever comes his way. And the python man that Prahlad Maharaj met while he was wandering in his kingdom is also like that. Yadrcha means by its own will, the own sweet will of providence. Labha santushta, satisfied with whatever he gains. And it requires this mentality in order to achieve the next quality in this, on the second pada of the shloka, which is dvandvatito vimatsaraha. In order to be transcendental to the dualities and especially from envy, one must be satisfied with whatever he gets. Otherwise, he'll be very much disturbed by happiness and distress, heat and cold, victory and defeat. And he'll be feeling envious when he sees other people have things better than he has. But if he's satisfied with what he has, then there's no reason for him to feel envious of the people who have a little bit more. Because those people who have a little bit more also have it by yadrchaya, by the will of their fate, right? So everybody has what they have according to their karma. And therefore there's no need to be envious of the other person who has a little more. We just have what we're supposed to get according to our previous actions. So a person, he knows that, and therefore he doesn't feel envy. This is the formula for getting free from envy. Krishna is given in this verse. And Prabhupada has, I think I have written some notes here. They appear to be from Prabhupada's lectures, which I started to do at this point. Unless one is freed from bodily conception, he cannot be satisfied with anything. Devotees are Vishvaspalam, and Krishna supplies food to elephants in the jungle and ants in my room. So why won't he supply me? And he gives an example that in 1942, there was an artificial famine was created by politicians. I guess this was in India, again. Yeah. And many were hungry. So one American said, in our country, there would have been a revolution, a war. But because Vedic culture is so nice that nobody stole a pin from others' pockets. They thought, God has put me in this condition. Why should I take others' property? But the American said, if this happened in America, there would have been a war. There would have been a civil war or a revolution inside of the country. But the Indian people, a little bit more advanced, and they understand, you know, this idea that, anyway, why should I take others' property? Because God has put me in this condition. And he commented on Dandvatitta Vimatsaraha. We should not be disturbed that, oh, he's eating more, he's enjoying more. Nobody is enjoying more. Whatever Krishna has given, he's enjoying. Oops. Okay, text 23.
Katta sangasya muktasya jnana vastita cetasaha yagya yacharata karma samagram pravaniyate.
The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. Of course, this doesn't mean that he merges into Brahman. Right? But the quality of his work and consciousness becomes Brahman or spiritualized. That's the meaning. So someone who is jnana vastita cetasa, he becomes spiritual. So we should never underestimate the potency of transcendental knowledge. Text 24.
Pamarpanam brahmahavir brahmagna brahmarahutam brahmaiva tena gantavyam brahma karma samadhina.
A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. Prabhupada comments, how activities in Krishna consciousness can lead one ultimately to the spiritual goal is described here. There are various activities in Krishna consciousness, and all of them will be described in the following verses. That's the next section. But for the present, just the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. So here, one's karma is known as Brahma Yajna, when he seeks revelation of Brahman in his karma with concentrated meditation. One's karma is known as Brahma Yajna when he's seeking the revelation of spirit, of Brahma, in his work. And he has this mentality, some concentrated meditation is there. This is from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Prabhupada also echoes this point in his commentary. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, it is said to be in samadhi or trance. Right? Brahma karma samadhina. Anything done in such transcendental consciousness is called yajna or sacrifice for the absolute. In that condition of spiritual consciousness, everything becomes one in the absolute, the supreme Brahman. That is the method of Krishna consciousness. It means to think of God while you're working. And then your work is called Brahma Yajna. So even though your work and the offering of your work, it may be considered material in some sense, but Prabhupada writes, matter, dovetail for the cause of the absolute truth, regains its spiritual quality. When it's dovetailed, being used for the purpose of the Lord. So, now you can see Prabhupada's translation is rather scientific. He uses, in the word Brahma Arpanam, contribution. And, right? And, Brahmagnau means the consumption. And Brahmahutam, Brahmanahutam, means that which is offered. So you have these terms. But actually, we see that the offering is Havi, which means butter. And Agna, other than consuming the butter, it is actually a fire, right? And Brahmana means the person who's doing the sacrifice. So, therefore, in the Gitamrit, I kind of made my own verse based on the Sanskrit here. And then there I wrote something like, Krishna was telling Arjuna rather strongly that, you are the Brahmana in this sacrifice, Arjuna. Your Gandiva bow is the spoon. Your fires are the ghee. And the Kaurava army is the fire. So now, perform your sacrifice, Arjuna. Right? This is the idea. In other words, Arjuna's fighting is not different from a Brahmana in the temple doing a yajna, offering the fire into the butter into the fire. It is of the same spiritual nature. It's both absolute. Although Arjuna is not a Brahmana, but his consciousness is the same as the Brahmana, so he gets the same result, which is that there is no reaction. But rather, he develops transcendental knowledge that he's not the body and so forth, and that the Lord is in his heart. So Krishna's describing how Arjuna can perform a spiritual sacrifice by performing his own swadharma, his own work. And it's the same as going to the forest and meditating on Brahman. It's the same as a priest in the temple offering a yajna or homa to the Lord. And this is actually the essence of chapter 4. If you were to draw a picture, sometimes we do this with children, so draw a picture of what you feel is the most important thing in chapter 4. You know, and this is sometimes it's interesting for adults also, because it makes you think, well, what is the essence of it? So if someone were to ask you, actually the best picture that you could draw would be someone doing a yajna with shruk and srava, you know, with butter into the fire, and actually it would be Arjuna. And this is in the book Gitamrita. You haven't seen this in the Russian language then. So the spoon has a picture of the Gandiva bow in it, inside of it, you know. And then the ghee is pouring down and has little arrows in it. And then in the fire are some soldiers on horses. They're the Kauravas, right? This is the philosophical picture. So this verse is actually the essence of this chapter 4. As Prabhupada said, in the third sentence of the paragraph, but for the present, just the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. So this is the principle, the main principle of chapter 4, and this is transcendental knowledge. Now whether you're sacrificing for Krishna as a Gaudiya Vaishnava, or you're a Nishkam Karma Yogi sacrificing for Vishnu, or for maybe even you have some impersonal understanding of the Absolute Truth, or the Paramatma, it doesn't matter, because they're all Brahma. Vadanti tat tat bhavidas tat bhavyanj gyanam anvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabite. So they're all absolute. There's no difference. It's just that one is, you know, two are incomplete and Bhagavan is complete. So in Gitamrita I added, Arjuna said, but I never heard of fighting as a sacrifice, Vasudeva. Tell me more about different sacrifices and how they can be performed. This like this. So, see, this leads into the next section. Because if you look, you'll see every verse in the next section describes three things. One is the person, the Brahmana, the person who's doing the yajna. Then there's the offering, which is the butter, the havi. And then the consuming agent, which is the agna, or the agni, the fire. In all of these next verses, all of these sacrifices, Krishna's just giving a list of different sacrifices, but they all have these three components: a contributor, a contribution, and a consuming agent. Okay, a contributor, a contribution, and a consuming agent. Which are these things mentioned? Huh?
Brahma
arpanam
and Brahmana hutam. What is
the
difference between the
two? Brahmana hutam.
And Brahma
arpanam. Yeah, arpanam means contribution. And butter also means the... yeah, I'd have to get some commentaries out to try to decipher the different things there. They could be the same. But let us... I'll have to look and see if there's any other translations available. Now, before we get into questions, we're talking about a principle here. And now Prabhupada gives an example, which is very good. I gave you one example just now, which is my own example, based upon the Sanskrit. But there's another example in the commentary. A patient who is suffering from a disorder of the bowels due to overindulgence in milk products. He ate too much sweet rice or some kheer or shrikhan, whatever. And he's cured by another milk product, namely curds. So in other words, someone's suffering from karma in the material world. And so how can he cure that? He performs karma, but in a certain way. You add a little tamarind to the karma and it transforms the karma into something which is medicinal, which is a remedial measure or a remedy for that problem, for that illness. So what is that transforming agent? What is that acid or tamarind? What do you think? Huh? Yeah, making a sacrifice, right? In your consciousness, right? You're looking for some connection with the Supreme. According to your level, whether you're a jnani or yogi or a bhakta, whether you're looking to a Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, or maybe even have another idea. But if you're looking towards the Supreme, looking revelation in Brahman, then this is transforms the karma from something bad to something good. From some illness to a medicine. So, you know, people fighting as a kshatriya in a battlefield like Arjuna is going to do, usually they do it in a very selfish way. Their mind is fixed on killing the enemy so that they can enjoy the kingdom. Right? So this is in a material way. So they're still performing a karmic activity. But if the mentality is different, then the result is also different. So this is the main principle here. So now Krishna gives Arjuna a list of many different sacrifices. And they all have this idea of sacrificing, somehow connecting to the Supreme. And in the Vedas there's different kinds of sacrifices for the different kinds of people. There's Dravya Yajna, Jnana Yajna, Yoga Yajna. There's Ashtanga or Jnana Yajna, Ashtanga Yoga. There's doing Pranayama. There's offering to the Devas. There's the Brahmacharis and Grihasthas. It's like, you know, the whole range. Everything you can imagine there practically. So basically there's three kinds. persons who are attracted or involved with the body, their bodily consciousness, people who are involved with or attached to the mind, and people who are attracted to the intelligence. And there's sometimes some combination of those things in each of these sacrifices. Prabhupada mentions this towards the end in text 32 of the commentary. We can read that now before we get into the thing. Different types of sacrifices are mentioned in the Vedas to suit different types of workers. Because men are so deeply absorbed in the bodily concept, these sacrifices are so arranged that one can work either with the body, with the mind, or with the intelligence. But all of them are recommended for ultimately bringing about liberation from the body. Okay, so that's the reference for this point. So let's go to this list now. This is the fourth section in this chapter. Okay, let us chant. Daivam eva pariyagyam yogina pariupasate brahmana va pariyagyam yagyena eva pajuvati. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them, and some of them offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. So here we have demigod worship being mentioned. So these are called yogis, and they're worshiping the demigods. Check it out. So these are karma yogis. Probably sakam karma yogis, right? But they could be nishkam too. Let's give them the benefit of a doubt. But generally people who worship the demigods are doing it right in a certain way. But here it says that they perfectly worship the demigods. So I guess that's Prabhupada's, you know, translation for it. So why is it perfect? Because by doing this puja, these karma yogis gradually attain nishkam karma yoga. So that means that we can accept that they're sakam, because they develop a nishkam mentality by doing this, and they don't think that the demigods are Brahman, but they realize that the demigods are jivas, and that they're subordinate to the Supreme Lord. They worship what kind of demigods? Like Indra, Varuna, or mentioned. Okay. And the other ones, they offer sacrifices to the Supreme Brahman by chanting Om and the Mahavakya Tattvam Asi. And Prabhupada mentions that these are impersonalists, and they sacrifice their identity by merging into the existence of impersonal Brahman in the commentary. He says at the bottom of the commentary, for the impersonalists, the fire altar of sacrifice is the Supreme Brahman, and the offering is the self being consumed by the fire of Brahman. So the word yogina in the verse means karma yogis, and the word apare, others, means jnana yogis. Apare means others. And they're offering their soul to merge into the impersonal Brahman. That's their butter. And the fire is the fire of Brahman. So the offering and the offerer are the same in that case. So Prabhupada writes in the middle of the commentary, all the different varieties of sacrifices can be placed within two primary divisions. One, sacrifice of worldly possessions. That's called karma yajna. And two, sacrifice in pursuit of transcendental knowledge. Guess what that's called? Take a guess. Come on. If the first one's karma yajna, huh? Jnana yajna. Yeah, transcendental knowledge. So there's two kinds of sacrifice. Now we said there's three, right, according to the body, mind, and intelligence. That's kind of like when you're looking at the individual person. And when you're looking at the sacrifice itself, there's two divisions, karma yajna and jnana yajna. Okay. Okay, let's go to the first one. That's later, that's dravya yajna. Yeah. Well, okay, I'll give you some examples, like giving charity to the poor, digging wells, planting trees. These are all like very traditional, like making a bathing ghat. It's dharmsha, huh? And these are also called dravya yajna.
These can also be done to acquire jnana.
Yes.
Then how are the different categories?
Well, one is has more knowledge like inherent within it. And the other one like leads one. Like the ones, the yogis who worship the demigods, they gradually attain nishkam karma. So they're doing karma yajna, right? But it brings them to nishkam karma. So when they come to nishkam karma, gradually they can get knowledge. So then they can start doing jnana yajna, which would be a little higher. Okay, let's go to the next verse. Shatradin indriyanyanye samyamagni shudhubati shabdadin vishayan anya indriyagni. Some, the unadulterated brahmacharis, sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control. Kinds of persons. The unadulterated brahmacharis means the naishtika brahmacharis. I told you there's four kinds, right? Do you remember what they were? Savitri, Prajapatya, Brahma, and naishtika, or Brihad. Yeah. The first one is has to be celibate for at least 3 days. Second one, at least a year. Third one, for the length of his Vedic study. And then the other one is for his whole life. So what do they sacrifice? Shrotra Adini. The hearing process. Right? And the senses. In the fire of the control, or mental control. So, that is their butter. The hearing process, the senses, mainly the sense of hearing, beginning with the sense of hearing, but all of the senses, juvati, then we get the word juhu, right? Juhu means the place of sacrifice. Yes. And the devotees who went there in the early days understand this very well. Right? Yes. This opened the door of Krishna consciousness for the Hare Krishna movement in India because of Juhu, the place where the devotees first performed intense austerities. And then after that, the other temples started to manifest. Think about it. It has a very deep purport, actually. They have this, there's this verse, Juhuhu sasna arya namagarnandiyete Juhu. Te puste Juhuvu sasna arya. Brahman. Namagananti. Te pus tapaste. So they're performing tapas. Juhu Vu Sasna Arya. In Juhu. So here we have the same kinds of sacrifices the brahmacharis make. Jubati. So you see. The butter for the grihasthas is the vishayan, the objects of the senses. And where do they offer it? Indriyagnishu, in the fire of the senses. Whereas the brahmacharis are offering the senses to the mind, the grihasthas are offering sense objects to the senses, which is easier to do. Right? Like the tongue, or the fire would be like a tongue, and then the grihastha is offering like a big pizza or something into the, right? Or a chocolate cake. And the tongue is gobbling it up. But the brahmachari, he's taking his senses and offering it into the fire of mental control. So it's more difficult. Right? Sometimes it's good to think of a picture in your mind, and you can get a clear understanding. That's why it's good when you're teaching children, you tell them, okay, now everybody draw a picture of this one. And then you get some really far out pictures. If you have to do that, then you should always ask the children to draw pictures. It helps them a lot. Now, grihasthas are also four kinds. There's the Varta. He's the most attached. He's the professional person. Varta. Actually, I didn't really prepare this, but I have just the notes here. I just try to remember. So this is a professional person. He's got a good job, good pay, and people respect him, and he goes to work from 9 to 5 or whatever, you know. Steady job. And that's kind of respected also nowadays because of various sociological factors. We can discuss another time perhaps. Sanchaya, the person a little bit more renounced, he's called an accumulator, kind of like a catfish style, you know, he goes around and kind of gets whatever he can. Maybe he has different kinds of jobs that are maybe temporary jobs or part-time jobs or like this. So he accumulates a little money here and a little here. He has a little business on the side. You know, like this. Huh? You got some example? And he has more time, you know, to kind of do what he likes to do. Because he doesn't have like a 9-to-5er, you know, every day locked into the punching the clock and all this. So some days he can take off. Then you have the Shalina. Shalina. All it says in the Bhagavatam here, I mean, I guess I could look in Manasamhita and find more, but here it just says that he doesn't ask anything from anybody. Shalina. Shalina. He doesn't ask anything from anybody. He is more renounced. Exactly what he does, it's hard to say. But whatever he doesn't ask anybody. And Shilunchan. 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 Yeah. He collects grains from the agricultural fields, or sometimes from the market. He's the most detached person. Because you can imagine, he can just do this for maybe 1 hour in a day and get some food enough to live for him and a small family maybe. Because when they're harvesting, they leave a lot of stuff hanging around there. They, you know, the farmers, they don't pick up every grain. They leave a lot of stuff there. So if you go to the field, you can get grains. Anywhere, in any country. And at the market, when they're, you know, pouring, you know, 20 kilos, 50 kilo bags, and the guys are weighing it, then there's all stuff laying on the ground. No one's going to go there. You know, but you can go there and pick it up. It'll be a little dirty. You bring it, throw it in your bag. You go home, wash it, and then you cook. That's pretty renounced for a grihastha, you know. So you can see there's different levels of grihasthas also in the Vedas, in the varnashram system. Nowadays, I think if someone in ISKCON did any of those other ones, it's like the Shiloncha, they would be like, people would kind of look down upon him or frown upon him or even criticize him. Like, are you crazy? You know? You madman? Imagine what his wife would say. You rascal, go out and get a job. What are you bringing home some dirty grains from the marketplace? You know? Why did I marry such a crazy guy like you? But I want to hear and chant more. Yeah, but you just have to look what we're eating. Come on. Yeah. I imagine maybe a Sudama Brahman's wife maybe could have been criticizing him also. Why don't you go ask? Go to Lord Krishna. Get some. Look at your. Actually, she wasn't like that. It was mentioned in the commentary. She was concerned about his welfare because he was so skinny. You know. She was pure. But you could imagine that some other woman, maybe not so pure. Okay. So, but the grihastha, there's some enjoyment, but because there's yajna, his attachment to the world is limited, controlled, and gradually it begins to, by doing the sacrifice, it gradually begins to evaporate, whatever. His attachment, he doesn't become attached to the material world because he's performing his yajna.
What is the sacrifice?
Well, it's just offering the senses into the fire of the sense objects in the fire of the senses. So, but in a regulated way, you know, like the grihasthas, they have union only once a month, and they don't have when they have pregnancy. There's no union. That itself is one major. The major restriction. And they could also not eat any food which is not offered to the Lord. That's another major restriction. And they may also have another restriction that before they eat, they go outside and they say, anyone come, wants anyone who's hungry. That's the main, for grihasthas, these are the main things that limit them, which focus their mind on God. Because why do they accept those restrictions? Because the Supreme Lord will be pleased. Or for purification. Self-purification. And then they have to see that all living entities are part and parcel of God. Otherwise, why should we restrict our eating just to feed those, whoever comes? Prabhupada writes, this restricted, unattached sex life is also kind of yajna. Because the restricted householder sacrifices his general tendency towards sense gratification for higher transcendental life. That's the last sentence there. Okay. The brahmachari, he doesn't hear rock music and prajalpa, go to the movies. He limits his hearing only to hearing Bhagavad Katha from the guru. Prabhupada mentions it in the commentary. and he hears the Harinam, Kirtan and Harikatha.